Welcome to the August 24th, 2011 Landmarks Preservation Commission. First item on the agenda is roll call. Commissioners present, Chair McIntyre, Commissioners Luce, Eckley, Sundell, and Jensen. Second item on the agenda, consent agenda, excusal of absences. Those commissioners who have called in, Vice Chair Maddox, Commissioners House, FOM, and ex officio McClintock, though we will see ex officio McClintock at the ARC meeting later. Move excusal of absences. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor of granting excusals, say aye.
Aye.
Move on beyond, we'll go to item four, board briefings. Item A, Marine Martin Bridge, Tom Rutherford. Take it away.
Mr. Chair, commission members, I'm Tom Rutherford. I'm with Public Works Engineering, and I'm the project manager for the Marine Martin Bridge. I've been working on it now for about a year and a half, and good to say we're finally into the real meat of the project now. So got a little presentation to show you where we are. What we're going through as far as historical mitigation. Just a little history, it was completed in 1913. The port approach was the original wood structure until it was replaced by the concrete structure in 1957. It was put on the National Register in 1982. It's also on the state and local registers. It was named after Murray Morgan. He was a bridge tender and wrote part of his book, Skid Row, while he was a bridge tender. Hopefully it was a little bit busier in his days, because it would be a pretty boring job, I think, up there. We only get about four openings a month during the winter time, and maybe 12 to 15 in the summer. So you'd have to have something else to do up there to keep your mind. The state... it was the city's bridge. The state took it over when they made 11th Street 509 in the 50s. They closed it to traffic in 2007 because of structural deficiencies. The state was planning to tear the bridge down, and there was such a public outcry from Save Our Bridge people that... we tried to find a way to save the bridge, and in 2009, we actually transferred the bridge from the State Department of Transportation to the city. They gave us some money, not enough to complete the rehabilitation, but we've since been able to get a little bit more. So then we decided to use a design-build contract for the rehabilitation. We selected a team in December. And then the notice to proceed and the signed contract was January of this year. We plan to have traffic back on the bridge by the end of 2012. So, just a little bit of, if I talk in certain terms, it's really about three bridges. It's the city approach, which goes from, over Cliff Street, 705, the railroad tracks, and Dock Street. And that was built in 1913, so that's part of the original structure. The three truss spans over the waterway, which I think are the most historical portion of the bridge. And then the port approach, which was, it could be historical in its own right. It was one of the first pre-stressed concrete bridges built in the western U.S. So, but it was... like I said, built in 1957. Probably an engineer would think it more historical than most people. But during the studies that were done on the bridge, prior to classifying it as a historical structure and putting it on the registry, the things that were brought up that, why is this bridge historically significant? It's an early example of a vertical lift bridge. Most vertical lift bridges are built flat or, no slope. This one does have a slope. It has extreme deck height compared to a lot of bridges. It's 60 foot at high tide to currents, which allows a lot of traffic to go underneath it, which is why we don't have to operate it as much. And at full height, it's 135 feet. There was an overhead truss that was incorporated into the original design to carry a water line from the city into the port. That water line was taken out a number of years ago, but Tacoma Power, AT&T, and the fire department still have lines going over that truss. Tacoma Power's is not energized at the moment, but that now that we're going to save the bridge, they may think about redoing those lines. That overhead truss was replaced in 1969 with an aluminum truss to reduce weight. And it's the work of Waddell and Harrington, which are really renowned bridge engineers from, they're from the Midwest, but they did bridges all over the U.S. In fact, the successor firm of Waddell Harrington, Hardesty and Hanover, is our designer on the bridge, and they still had some of the original files back in their office, which was rather neat. Because we have federal funding, most of the money that we've got on the bridge is federally funded. We do have to follow Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act. And one of the initial things we had to do was determine if we were going to have an adverse effect on the bridge. This is a rehabilitation, not a restoration. We have to do some things to it just to enable us to restore the bridge. And so they determined that there was an adverse effect. What we were going to do was an adverse effect on historic property. As a result of that, we had to do a couple of things. One was a cultural resources assessment to see if it affected any other historic properties in the region. We don't. We also had to develop a mitigation plan, which said, here's what we're going to do to certain key elements of the bridge, the ones that were determined to be historic in nature. And then at the end of this process, there was a memorandum of agreement between WASDOT, the Federal Highway Administration, the State Historical Preservation Officer, and I think Ruben even signed this one for the city. So, and what does that require? Some of the stuff that is in the MOA is we needed to enhance the documentation, of the bridge. So we've done that, and we prepared as-built of the bridge. What we did was a laser surveys, and which also has a lot of photographs in it. So we have what it was before we started to touch it. Another thing is create interpretive signage about the bridge along the Foss Waterway. We've discussed that a little bit. We're trying to coordinate that with the signage that was put in at Dock Street and the signage that was put in at North Morridge and some of the other Foss Waterway, so we get a constant theme. We're also looking at a plaque for Murray Morgan that will be placed someplace on the bridge. One of the other requirements was to develop a website that chronicles the history of the bridge, and that is available. If you haven't looked at the city's website, there's the address. You click on that, there's a history link. We had Carolyn Galacci prepared that. History. It's more than just a history of a bridge. It sort of looks at the development of Tacoma. So it's on there. The last item there is to prepare an operation and maintenance plan that takes into account the historical items on the bridge. This is one of the things we'll be doing at the conclusion, near the conclusion of the project. Some of the mitigation measures that were brought up in the mitigation plan are to reuse the historical railings. We'll be taking the railings off, sending them to a shop, getting them blasted, repainted, and then they'll be reinstalled at the end of the project. Paint the steel, the historical color, and that was one of the items we came to you before about, what color should we paint the bridge. So it will be black. Reuse the counterweights, which are the massive concrete 300-ton blocks. We will be painting those a grayish color to give a little bit of contrast on the bridge. but we are going to keep those. Replace the counterweight shivs and operating drums with similar mass items. You can sort of see the counterweight shivs are these big round up at the top where the cables go over. You can't really tell where the operating drums are. But those we're going to replace, try to replace as similar as possible. That was one of the items that was brought up is might be something we want to save and use an interpretive display. Those operating shivs are pretty heavy. We might try to keep one of them for something. If anybody has an idea or anybody knows a place that really wants to, display one of those, we'd be willing to talk to them. But they weigh several tons each and are pretty big. So some of the other measures, there was a capstan outside the mechanical room that they used to be able to use to raise the bridge manually. In fact, I heard that they even brought down prisoners from the jail to run that, to operate it. We will be keeping that there. It hasn't been operational for a number of years, although we looked at trying to revive it when we had the theft of all the wiring and we needed to raise the bridge, but we found a better method to do that. Retain the mechanical and operations equipment. Like I said, one of the things was the shivs. The other things are in the operator's room, the old handbrake, the control panel, the gauge that tells you how high the bridge is. We're trying to work something, either in the History Museum or someplace to find a way to display these portions, old pieces from the bridge. One of the other things we're going to do is we're going to take the gear frame that's inside the mechanical room and put it on. There's a stormwater vault underneath the bridge. Put that on there, right near Dock Street. People will be able to access it, view it from either the Esplanade or Dock Street sidewalk. And so we'll put some signage there too, just describing how it worked as part of the original bridge. One of the things we're going to do is, one of the things we have to do to really rehabilitate the bridge is decrease the weight. It is getting, even with repair, it's older. So we're taking it, and one of the things that's really bad shape is the sidewalk. So we're going to remove all the sidewalks except on the port approach. We're going to change it from 4 lanes of traffic to 2 lanes of traffic. And we really, since the Blair Bridge went out, there really isn't, the traffic dropped by a third. Anyway, so we don't need 4 lanes of traffic, but what we will be putting in is bicycle lanes and sidewalks, so it will be accessible for everybody. A couple of the other things was the gusset plates, which are the big steel plates that hold the beams together. They wanted similar-looking gusset plates. That's one of the reasons the bridge was closed. If you remember the collapse of the I-35 bridge in Minnesota, that was one of the things that failed there, the gusset plates, and they're in pretty bad shape. The operator and mechanical houses, we're going to keep the operator's room, which is the smaller building there. We're going to replace the shingles on the roof. The mechanical room is in very bad shape, so we're actually going to take that off, put a new one in there, but we will keep the same shape. The same slope of the same hip roof, the same shape. We are going to take out a couple of the windows and doors with the new equipment that we have to bring the bridge up to code. We need a lot more wall space than there is with all the windows in there. So, but for the most part, you won't be able to tell, other than the windows and doors, I think you won't be able to tell anything from the existing building. We do have to bring the port approach railing up to code, and we initially were looking at, do we need to replace that with a railing that looks like the railing on the other two portions of the bridge? And the historical people said, no, that's been there a long time, so let's try to do a modification that keeps that railing intact, and so we've added another aluminum bar to bring that up. Then one of the things we also had to do is replace portion of the Dock Street stairs that go from the bridge deck down to Dock Street. One of the things that was in the mitigation was that we could replace those with an elevator and a new set of stairs. We were hoping we could get by with just replacing the lower section of the Dock Street stairs, the wood section that's covered. They're in really bad shape. But once we touch those, we have to provide ADA access. So it looks like we're looking at the elevator option right now. So that's good. And that picture was taken, I believe, yesterday. You can see where we are. We've essentially covered most of the bridge's containment structure for removing the lead-based paint. We've completed most of the design packages. We've still got a little bit of work on the seismic design to go. We're starting steel repairs this week. We're actually doing the column repairs. And also we'll start doing some of the gusset plate repairs next week. Overall, we're 25% complete, approximately, and so far on schedule and budget. So, if you got any questions, I'd be happy to.
Go ahead, comments, questions, commissioners.
It looks like you guys are doing a really very thorough and thoughtful job. I really appreciate that. I'm curious about the interpretive signage because I'm a research historian. I was wondering who writes that and what's the review process for that? Is that done in house or is that?
That's something we're trying to coordinate with the art section, and I imagine Ruben will have some say in it too. I don't know if we'll have a consultant come in and do some of that and then have it reviewed. That's still, that's probably something we're starting to think about now, but really probably won't get done until sometime next year.
Right. I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that question.
Oh, just what's the who writes the interpretive signage and what's the review process?
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah,
something that, well, there's going to be a couple of different things. There's actually going to be a plaque, that talks about the bridge's original history, maybe design or build date, rehab date, which is a pretty standard thing. There may be something else added to that. But then there's also a public art component that we're discussing right now, and that would be that would be managed through the Arts Commission process. And so there'd be a selection, I think, of who would generate that material and that narrative and so forth. So the Arts Commission would have it, although I'd probably be working on the selection of that and the review of that and then circling that back to this commission.
Okay, then. Yeah, I really enjoy seeing some of the draft.
Yeah, they don't let engineers do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my concern.
Who's your the people doing the Section 106 report?
We had a consultant, David Evans, an associate, that helped us out quite a bit with that. We worked closely with Trent DeBoer, the state, and a number of other people. It was probably we started that process in probably March of 2010 and probably didn't get everything completed until September. So it took a little bit longer than I thought it would. But I mean, that was the whole NEPA cultural resources process.
Because David Evans, an associate with the city's consultant, then we had Trent and a couple of the people with WashDOT and then the Federal Highways guys kind of overseeing the whole.
So is that, yeah. That's just who's on call for the city?
Who's on call, I think. Well, I don't know who David Evans has on.
They had cultural resources consultants really do the mitigation plan and the cultural assessment. So.
Okay.
Yeah, they'll have a sub on call.
They have
sure.
A cultural component, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are there other comments or questions from
the commissioners? I have a question. This has really nothing to do with it. Can you go back to this slide?
Mm-hmm.
I've always wondered about this. I've walked underneath it so many times. I've always been curious. It looks like there are roadways here, not the stair, but roadways.
Right.
What did they do? What
that
did they
used to, before they built 705 and Schuster Way, there used to be a road deck that went all the way over to Cliff. So you
That's
used to
I
be
thought.
Able to drive
right.
from Cliff Street and make a couple hairturn
yeah.
turns and
yeah,
come all
like
the way down.
Yeah, it looked like to do that.
Yeah, come all the way down to Dock Street. It
okay,
actually
cool.
came to the south side of Dock Street.
Yeah, you can see that there are a couple of photos.
Yeah, I always thought it was
in the library that actually show that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like it's asphalt over car decking, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, it's wood. Yeah. Actually,
yeah.
we're going. That's another thing we have to do to reduce weight. We're going to get rid of the car deck. We'll leave the structural members, but that wood is going to go to a boat building shop up in Seattle. They're going to try to make boats out of it. So if not, they'll use it in their facility itself. So we'll get a reuse.
So
that will go.
Yep. Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, it's reduce weight.
Yeah.
The other problem is we have a lot of problem right now with transients getting on there, mm-hmm. and so it's going to help us for public safety.
I think my understanding is the project has developed a lot of this. The engineering hurdle for getting the bridge back into service has been really the dead load issue.
Both dead load and live load. So by reducing it to two lanes, we take the live load in half, dead load. Yeah, 'cause we originally looked at, the original deal with WSDOT was to replace the bridge. And we did a study of that, and to replace it's about $160 million. So they said, no, we can't afford that for this. So then we did an evaluation to see can we even save it? And really what you find is there's still a lot of good steel on the bridge. Where we've had problems is where it's exposed to the weather, especially under the expansion joints that have failed. And also because we're keeping the center two lanes as the traffic lanes. There was, one time there was a streetcar that went down the middle two lanes. So that was built a little bit sturdier in those sections. So what we found is if we keep the heavy load in the middle of the bridge, use the outside of the bridge as sidewalk and a bicycle, that we could rehabilitate it for what we're looking at now.
Wouldn't it be great if you could reclaim some of those things like that timber, the car decking,
mm-hmm.
and use it as part of your interpretive signage somehow incorporated in there?
We may be able to. We'll take a look at that. One of the things that we're trying to do, though, is try to keep a consistent theme along the Foss Waterway, and we've already got some signage at the Dock Street overpass there. Great separation. We've got some signage that was put in during the FOSS remediation, the cleanup work in the FOSS, and then there's some other signage that's down near Theus Park, north of the dock building. So we may try to keep sort of a consistent theme along the waterway. There'll be signs essentially along the Esplanade. That's where we'll be putting some of them.
There's going to be materials coming out of the project, like the mechanical stuff, too, that was already mentioned. So I think there's probably going to be some opportunities to salvage items and place them back into sort of a public art / historical interpretive
yeah.
context. And that's sort of under development. But that's where, as far as I understand, definitely looking at that.
Right.
Cool.
Questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will adjourn and go to our ARC meeting now at 524 North K Street.
We're going to be looking at 524, and I think across the street there's an apartment building at 511, too. They're right in the same block, owned by the same owner. So we'll just meet by Hank's Tavern.